This meeting will come to order and welcome to the regular meeting of the Board of Supervisors Budget and Finance Committee for Wednesday, April 16th, 2025. I'm Supervisor Matt Dorsey, Vice Chair of this committee, serving as Chair today in Chair Connie Chan's absence. I'm joined by our regular committee member, Supervisor Joel Engardio, as well as Supervisor Cheyenne Chen, who is sitting in for Chair Chan today. Our clerk, the always capable Brent Halipa, is here. I would like to also thank Kalina Mendoza and the entire team at SFGov TV for broadcasting and facilitating today's meeting. Mr. Clerk, do you have any announcements?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Just a friendly reminder to those in attendance to please make sure to silence all cell phones and electronic devices to prevent interruptions to our proceedings. Should you have any documents to be included as part of the file, they should be given to myself, the clerk. Public comment will be taken on each item on this agenda. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, please line up to speak on the west side of the chamber to your right and my left along those curtains. And while not required to provide public comment, we do invite you to fill out a comment card and leave them on the tray by the television to your left by the doors if you wish to be accurately recorded for the minutes. Alternatively, you may submit public comment in writing in either of the following ways. Email them to myself, the Budget and Finance Committee Clerk, at brent.jalipa@sfgov.org. If you submit public comment via email, it will be forwarded to the supervisors and also included as part of the official file. You may also send your written comments via U.S. Postal Service to our office in City Hall at 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. And finally, Mr. Vice Chair, items acted upon today are expected to appear on the Board of Supervisors agenda of April 22nd, unless otherwise stated. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. And before we get into the items on today's agenda, I'd like to make a motion to excuse Chair Connie Chan. Mr. Clerk, can we please call the roll?
And on that motion to excuse Supervisor Chan from attending today's meeting, Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Member Chen.
Aye.
Chen, aye. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. We have three ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. The motion passes. Can we please call item one?
Yes, item number one. Item number one is a resolution authorizing the Recreation and Park Department to enter into a grant.
I apologize. I meant to. Can we call item one and two together?
Yes. Okay. Item numbers one and two are resolutions authorizing the Recreation and Park Department to enter into grant agreements with the following: to accept and expend cash and or in-kind grants effective upon approval of the respective resolutions, and authorizing the general manager of the Recreation and Park Department to enter into amendments or modifications to the grant agreement, provided that they do not materially increase the obligations nor liabilities of the city and are necessary to effectuate the purposes of the project or the respective resolutions. Item number one is with Wu Yi Children's Services, valued at approximately $1.1 million for the Tenderloin Recreation Center Children's Playground Improvements Project to expire once the grant has been expended and the project is complete. Item number two is with Kaboom, valued at approximately $5 million to support improvements for up to 8 children's play space sites through notice of substantial completion. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. And actually, one thing I would say just for those watching at home and for those in the audience, that some of the items we have today, we will hear from the Budget and Legislative Analyst, and that's going to be items 3 through 6. For those items, we'll hear from the department presentation first. We'll then hear from the Budget and Legislative Analyst. We can then facilitate questions among the committee members and then open it up to public comment. Items 1 and 2 do not have a BLA report, and I would like to welcome up Abigail Maher, the Deputy Director of Partnerships with the Recreation and Park Department, to present. Ms. Maher, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Supervisors. Yes, I'm Abigail Mayer with the Recreation and Park Department, presenting two accept and expends this morning. The first one is the Wu Yi Children's Services Tenderloin Recreation Center Children's Playground. Wu Yi Children's Services is San Francisco's largest Head Start and early Head Start provider. They offer quality child care to San Francisco's diverse communities and families. and Wu Yi manages 12 childcare sites throughout the city. One of their childcare sites is the Golden Gate Learning Center, which is less than a mile away from the Tenderloin Recreation Center. Since Wu Yi's Golden Gate site does not have an outdoor space, they use the outdoor space at Tenderloin Rec. In order to help improve the outdoor space, Wu Yi has proposed to provide the department with $1,125,000 in cash and in-kind grants for design and construction of a new play space on that site. These funds come from a $1 million CAL FIRE Urban and Community Forestry Green Schoolyards Child Care Grant and $125,000 grant to Wu Yi from Head Start California. The new playground design will utilize natural materials and integrate nature exploration for an outdoor learning environment. The renovated playground will include an outdoor classroom to be used by Wu Yi's Golden Gate program as an extension of their early childhood classroom program. We are really thankful for Wu Yi's partnership and generous philanthropic support for this project, and we're excited to move forward with this project in the coming months. Thank you, and I'm available for any additional questions.
Great, thank you so much. Ms. Maher, I don't have any questions, and I don't see any of my colleagues on the roster with questions or comments. Mr. Clerk, can we open this up to public comment?
Yes, we are now opening public comment for any members of the public who have joined us today who wish to address this committee regarding these items 1 and 2. Mr. Vice Chair, we have no speakers.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Public comment is now closed, and I don't see any one on the roster with questions or comments, so I appreciate the presentation. I think I would like to move to send both of these items out to the full board committee, to the full board with positive recommendations. Mr. Clerk, can we have a roll call on that motion?
Yes, and on that motion, to forward both resolutions to the full board with a positive recommendation, Member Engardio.
Aye.
Engardio, aye. Member Chen. Chen, aye. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. We have 3 ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. The motion passes. Thanks so much. Mr. Clerk, can you please call the next item?
Yes, item number 3 is a hearing to consider the release of Board of Supervisors reserved funds delegated to be released by this committee by Board Resolution Number 225. Once all grant requirements have been met and the fiscal impact report received, to the Recreation and Park Department for the Twin Peaks Promenade Project in the amount of approximately $1.5 million from the California Department of Parks and Recreation. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. For this item, we have Tony Moran, Capital Grants Manager of the Recreation and Park Department, to present. Ms. Moran, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Chairperson Dorsey and supervisors. The item before you is a resolution to retroactively authorize the Recreation and Park Department to accept grant funds in the amount of $1,493,692 from California State Parks for the Twin Peaks Promenade Project for the grant performance period of September 20, 2024 through March 15, 2027. The resolution also approves the grant contract with California Department of Parks and Recreation, which requires the department to operate and maintain the site for a period of 20 years, commencing upon project completion, and pursuant Charter Section 9.118B. And the third item in the resolution is to authorize the general manager to enter into amendments and modifications to the grant contract that do not materially increase obligations or liabilities to the city and are necessary to effectuate the purposes of the grant contract or this resolution. So the little background is the Recreation and Trail Program is a state-administered program, but it is actually a federal program by the U.S. Department of Transportation Federal Highway Administration. This organization transfers funds to California State Parks, who then administers the program at the state level. We have been in contact with the state agency, and these funds are not in danger of being rescinded. The legislation before you is supported by the Recreation and Park Commission. On September 21st, 2023, the Recreation and Park Commission adopted Resolution 2309-010, approving the department's application to application for the Recreation Trail Program Funds. It also authorized the general manager of the Recreation and Park Department to negotiate agreements with the state concerning the administration of the grant. It certified that the department had sufficient funds to operate and maintain the site for the term of the grant performance period, and it recommended that a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to accept and expend the grant. The Twin Peaks Promenade Project is the result of about 5 years of work from the department that resulted in the closure of a portion of Twin Peaks roadway, which will be transformed into a new park that has an accessible multi-use trail with both aggregate and paved surfaces, user amenities, native plantings that will be consistent with the native plants up in the Twin Peaks area, and also provide connections to the trail system that exists in Twin Peaks open space. The grant is noted to be retroactive because the grant contract is backdated till September 20th, 2024. That allows the department to use funds that we have already expended in planning and design as grant match. So at this point, none of the actual recreation and trail program funds have been expended because those are focused on construction cost. And that concludes my presentation.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Moran. I think this is a good project, and I'm grateful to hear that the funds are not endangered. Next, we'll hear from the budget and legislative analyst.
Good morning, Nick Menard from the Budget Legislative Analyst Office. Item three is a hearing that would release from reserve about $1.5 million in grant revenues related to the grant that the department just explained. The grant agreement was already approved by the board in January. The funds were placed on reserve. As you can see on page four of our report, this $1.5 million grant will help fund the Twin Peaks Promenade Project. It's overall, that's a $5.2 million project, building a park on Twin Peaks. It's going to take place over the next year and be done by the end of 2026. There is a matching fund requirement that's being met by a previously approved grant that the board already approved, and a general obligation bond allocation that the board also already approved for this project. So the project is fully funded with this grant. Recommend approval of releasing these funds from reserve.
Great, thank you, Mr. Menard. I don't see anyone on the roster with questions or comments, so Mr. Clerk, may we open this item up to public comment?
Yes, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number three, now is your opportunity. Mr. Vice Chair, we have no speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Public comment is now closed. And seeing no further questions or comments, I will make the motion. And for clarity's sake, for those watching at home or here in the chambers, this item was part of the federal spending omnibus package that the board approved back in January, so there's nothing to send out to the board. As such, I would move to release the reserve funds in the amount of $1,493,692 to the Recreation and Parks Department for the project described in this item, and that this hearing be heard and filed. Mr. Clerk, we have a roll call on that motion.
Now on that motion, that this committee approves to release $1.5 million of reserve funds to the Rec Park Department, and that this hearing be heard and filed. Member Engardio.
Aye.
Engardio, aye. Member Chen. Chen, aye. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. We have three ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. The motion passes. And Mr. Clerk, will you please call the next item?
Yes. Item number four is a resolution approving and authorizing the Director of Property on behalf of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing to execute a lease of real property with Roshan Investments, LLC, for the use of the Adante Hotel located at 610 Geary Street for a non-congregate temporary shelter program with 93 units for an initial term of 1 year to commence upon approval of this resolution with 4 one-year options to extend and an annual base rent of approximately $1.5 million with 3% annual increases if the city exercised the option to extend, affirming the planning department's determination under the California Environmental Quality Act and adopting the planning department's findings of consistency with the general plan and the 8 priority policies of the planning code, and authorizing the director of property to execute any amendments options to extend the agreement term, make certain modifications to take certain actions that do not materially increase the obligations nor liabilities to the city, do not materially decrease the benefits to the city, and are unnecessary or advisable to effectuate the purposes of the lease agreement or this resolution. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. We have Emily Cohen with the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing here to present. And then for my colleagues, we also have representatives from the Real Estate Division and the Department of Public Health if you happen to have any questions about that. Ms. Cohen, the floor is yours. Thanks so much.
Good morning, Vice Chair Dorsey. Good morning, supervisors. Thank you very much for having us. My name is Emily Cohen with the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. I'm here before you today with a resolution for a proposed lease for the Adante Hotel for continued use as a shelter for adults experiencing homelessness. Since this legislation was introduced, we have renegotiated the terms of the lease and will be proposing amendments today to reflect our new strategy for this property and our commitment to the neighborhood, which includes changing the term of the lease from 1 year with four options to extend to 1 year with one 1-year option to extend. Because of this ongoing negotiation, need to make this retroactive to April 1st of 2025, update some language. As part of that renegotiation, we have a $100,000 maximum final payment that we need to add to the legislation and make some administrative cleanup. So I will read those amendments into the record at the end of my presentation, if that works for you all. I'm also joined by my colleagues from the Real Estate Division and Public Health, and we're happy, really excited to talk to you about this project. The city has operated non-congregate shelter at the Adante Hotel since 2020 as part of the city's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. We came back to this board in July of 2024, where the board approved amendments to extend the existing booking agreement for an additional 7 months until March 31st of 2025, while the city renegotiated a better lease rate, moving from a booking agreement, which was a sort of emergency COVID approach, to a more sustainable and affordable lease agreement. Over that 7 months, we did that. For the Adante, and we also at that time closed down the Cova Hotel, which was part of the initial package, and just yesterday, the board moved forward a single-year lease for the Monarch Hotel as it winds down. So the lease details for the Adante, as was noted in the title, this property is at 610 Geary. It includes 93 rooms. The base rent is approximately $1.5 million. The new terms that we will read in that are reflected in the red line version that you all have is 1 year with one 1-year option to extend, a 3% escalator if we do opt for the second year, and a final payment of $100,000 if we terminate in 2026 and $90,000 if we terminate in 2027. And to further support the partnerships with the non-congregate hotels that were so instrumental to our COVID approach, we were at the Land Use and Transportation Committee earlier this month with a streamlined process for these hotels to retain or regain their tourist status so that as we wind down the shelter use, they can go back to tourist hotels and hopefully economic drivers in the community. We do need to go back to the Planning Commission in May to make that to bring that to light, but that is the strategy here. So as I mentioned before, we previously had a booking agreement for both the Adante and the Monarch hotels. Through the process of renegotiating these to leases, we have been able to save the city approximately $2.7 million in the new agreements. And for the Adante specifically, the cost savings is $1.3 million. So really pleased with what we've been able to do as stewards of taxpayer dollars here. And you can see the total per night operating costs of this program is $204 a night, which is compatible to other non-congregate programs. Of course, more expensive than congregate shelter, but we're also going to tell you a little bit about, in a moment, what makes this program so unique and special which I think we'll find appealing. So I know I've mentioned the community and the community engagement process throughout this conversation. We have been in close conversation with the Lower Knob Hill Neighborhood Alliance, as well as community stakeholders, both business and residential stakeholders in the Tenderloin over the past many months as we've been discussing these projects, and have, you know, and will continue to work with them. We've made a lot of changes to the proposed use of both, you know, closing the Cova and the proposed uses of the Monarch and the Adante. And so we are, you know, happy that we are able to meet some of the demands of the community, recognizing the unique situation that the Tenderloin and Lower Knob Hill are in. One of the things we've been able to bring to the table as part of this negotiation is an expansion, an expansion of community ambassadors through GLIDE in the area. We've expanded the footprint to go all the way up to Van Ness. So now it fully covers, it has always covered where the Adante was, but now the footprint of the ambassadors will also cover where the Monarch is, and will continue to provide that additional support to the neighborhood, both to our unhoused neighbors as well as to our housed neighbors and businesses. And the contract with Five Keys, who operates the Adante, includes a very robust community or good neighbor policy, which Five Keys takes very seriously. And on top of that, they have agreed to daily spray downs outside of the site to keep the frontage clean. They do hourly perimeter checks to really look for any garbage that needs to be cleaned up, any loitering, etc. And they've agreed and are reporting any encampments or other activities to 311 or 911 as appropriate, and escalating through the department. And I just want to take this a moment to thank Five Keys and really appreciate them. They are always willing to come to the table and try new things and try to make things better on the outside of their buildings. The inside of their buildings are always run very, very well, but we appreciate the extra attention to the outside. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Dara Papo, from the Department of Public Health to talk about the RESTORE program. RESTORE is a partnership between the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing and Public Health to make treatment available for folks immediately. And the Adante is home to the RESTORE program, which we'll be expanding, and we're very excited to tell you about it.
Good morning. I'm Dara Papo with the Department of Public Health, excited to talk with you about the RESTORE program. It is a new model to help people move quickly from the street into treatment along with a bed. The goal is to help support our unified street teams to focus on quickly connecting people to treatment 24/7, getting people off of the street, into a bed, and into treatment. It is able to historically serve people that have been challenged to successfully navigate treatment in the past. Some of the elements of RESTORE is that it provides 24 access to services. We can get people into care and treatment at any time, any day. It is a structured program, and so people must agree to a treatment plan and participating in services to enter the program. Clients really receive the gold standard medication for opioid use disorders, buprenorphine or methadone, and it includes engagement with a case manager daily. We have a proactive and assertive model to help people progress towards their goals and into long-term treatment or recovery. We are in the process of structuring to increase daytime programming and more outpatient care, with a goal of discharge planning and connections to placement in treatment, recovery, or a next level of care. Currently, the RESTORE program has 35 beds. We have, if we go back to the previous slide, elements 1 through 4. The aspect that is pending is that the way the building is structured, we currently are not able to really build out the day programming and structured outpatient treatment. We'll get to that in phase 2, and have really found this to be a very effective model to convince people to start treatment. Phase 2 of the RESTORE is scaling RESTORE to 73 beds at the Adante, really bringing in more structured outpatient treatment. And working on bridging to a new location with the proposal of remaining at the Adante until another location can be found. Given the success of this model, there's been interest in bringing it to other communities, and so there is an interest in Restore 2, which would bring the program to another site outside of the Tenderloin, anticipating starting that with 35 beds, which would bring us to a total of 108 treatment slots for Restore. We are excited and currently planning on phase 3, which would include both moving Restore from the Adante to another nearby location, including the second non-Tenderloin-based model, and anticipating scaling this to being 200 beds, including a site that would have 100 beds. And so we're really finding that some intensive stabilization has been helpful at getting people off the street, into treatment, and on a journey towards recovery. I think at this point we're pausing for questions. One more thing.
Yes, thank you. Just to clarify, and I know there's been some questions about the ongoing use of the Adante among the community, so I want to be crystal clear about how and the beds are going to be utilized. At this point, there are 35 beds dedicated to Restore at the Adante. We will be turning an additional 35 beds over to the Restore program as those beds are vacated. So we're not going to ask existing shelter guests to move out prematurely if they're not ready, but when they do move out, that bed, you know, the room will be cleaned and that bed will be converted to Restore with the goal of having 73 beds for Restore at the Adante. The remaining beds will be used for what we call overflow, which is a really unfortunate term, but what it means is journey home. So for folks who have been outreach to on the street and are requesting to return to their home community or to their loved ones, but they need a night or two until they can travel, we are going to hold a handful of rooms at the Adante for them. And then we also hold some rooms at the Adante in case someone living in congregate shelter gets COVID and they need to isolate and quarantine. So we will have isolation and quarantine rooms, journey home rooms, and Restore rooms. We will be winding down the traditional shelter beds over the course of the next few months as the beds turn over. Before we go to questions, if it works for the chair, can I read the amendments? Sure. Would you like me to read the amendments into
the record?
Okay. Sorry, this is where it gets extra wonky. So if on the short title, page 1, lines 1 through 2, please add retroactive an annual base rent of $1,597,320 and final payment of $100,000. In the long title, on page 1, line 3, add retroactively. Lines 7 through 8, update to read to commence on April 1st, 2025 with 1 year option to extend, with 1 one-year option to extend. Lines 9 through 10, add and a maximum final payment of up to $100,000 upon surrender of the property. Lines 11 through 13, remove and adopting the planning department's finding of consistency with the general plan and the 8 priority policies of the planning code, section 101.1. On line 14, remove options to extend the agreement term. In the body of the resolution on page 3, lines 3 through 4, update to read, for an initial term of 1 year to commence on April 1st, 2025. Page 3, lines 5 through 6, update to read, with 1 one-year option to extend with an annual increase of 3% if the city exercises the option to extend. On page 3, lines 8 through 12, add, whereas the lease includes a maximum final payment of $100,000 if the option to extend is not exercised, with the final payment decreasing to $90,000 if the lease is extended through March 31st, 2027. And whereas the final payment is to compensate the landlord for the short-term use of the property and any incidental expenses related to the exit from the property, and on page 3, lines 18 through 20, remove, and that the lease of the property is consistent and on balance with the general plan and the 8 priority policies of the planning code, section 101.1. On page 3, line 23, add the Board of Supervisors retroactively approves the lease. Page 4, line 2, remove and general plan findings. Page 4, line 3, replace findings with determination. Thank you for your patience.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Cohen, and thank you also, Ms. Papa. I think we may have some questions and comments, but first we're going to hear from Mr. Menard from the Budget and Legislative Analyst.
Item 4 is a resolution that would approve a lease between the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing and Roshan Investments LLC, which is the owner of the Adante Hotel at 610 Geary Street. The lease has a one-year term and one option to extend one additional year. The initial base rent is $1.48 million, and if the option is exercised, the total rent the city would pay is just over $3 million. That's a general fund cost, as we describe on page 9 of our report. The lease, this new revised lease, increases the termination fee at the end of year one from $60,000 to $100,000. So that is a slight increase for the city leaving the lease after year one. And then that fee goes down to $90,000 at the end of year two. We describe the rest of the lease terms on page 7 of our report. And just looking at the comparing the cost of the booking agreement, which was $2.9 million a year, this lease is about 50% less. It's about $1.5 million. So it is a much more cost-effective property agreement for the city. So we recommend approval of this lease.
Great, thank you, Mr. Menard. We are joined by our colleague, Supervisor Danny Sauter, who represents this facility in District 3. Supervisor Sauter, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Supervisor Dorsey. Colleagues, today's legislation comes only after months of work from our office and many, many partners. Considering if and how to pursue a lease for the Adante was one of the first things that we needed to decide as we took office. And I have not undertaken this decision lightly. I've spoken with countless Lower Knob Hill neighbors, homelessness providers, and with my colleagues in City Hall. I have toured the Adante multiple times, and I have made it a habit to stop by the surrounding blocks of Geary as often as possible, day and night, to see the conditions firsthand. I want to be very clear that I hear the concerns of Lower Knob Hill loud and clear. This incredible neighborhood has been ignored for far too long and deserves to be what I know it can be and what we all know it can be, a thriving and safe neighborhood. Over the past 5 years, Lower Knob Hill has seen an influx of new homelessness services and sites. It has been generous and welcoming, but it also has a right to keep us all accountable and to seek better results. Today, in large part because of this concentration in Lower Knob Hill, District 3 has the second highest concentration of homelessness services of any district, as detailed in a recent San Francisco Chronicle analysis. I believe that today's legislation for a one-year term with one-year option to extend is the best possible outcome for all involved. For our efforts to reduce homelessness and care for those on our streets, this allows us time to scale what's working, namely the Restore program, while pursuing a better overall model for other non-congregate beds. And I do want to pause and applaud the Restore program. For a long time as a city, we have talked about treatment on demand, and this program actually delivers it, and it's doing it in a quite effective manner. For the neighborhood, this legislation allows a definitive time window for the wind down of the Adante and an easing of the misguided concentration of services within a few square blocks. And thanks to the legislation I sponsored alongside the mayor and Supervisor Dorsey, there is now a legitimate pathway for the Adante to retain its license as a tourist hotel and to return to this use in the future to contribute to Lower Knob Hill and Union Square's roots of hospitality and tourism. I want to give a special thanks to Tomio Nagano in my office for approaching this topic and all these conversations with incredible care, diligence, and duty. I want to thank the mayor's office for their work on this. and to thank the many Lower Nob Hill neighbors, particularly Barbara Swan with the Lower Nob Hill Neighborhood Alliance, Tenderloin Housing Clinic, and Chris Schulman with the Lower Polk CBD for all of their engagement on this. Thank you, too, to the partners from HSH, DPH, and Five Keys for their daily dedication to uplifting the most vulnerable and saving lives through the Restore program. Finally, I want to make clear that this is just one small piece of our office's work to improve Lower Nob Hill. We will continue to prioritize this neighborhood. Already, we have guided the passage of more than 300 new homes on Sutter Street that will break ground soon. Just last week, I joined Draymond Green and Top Chef alum Nelson German for the opening of their new restaurant, Mesky, at Larkin and Post. We are working to restore the badly needed footbeat officers in the neighborhood, and we are aggressively pursuing the acquisition of a site for a new park to deliver open space that this densely populated neighborhood so deserves. So colleagues, thank you for letting me join you this morning, and I ask for all of these reasons that you will support this lease and legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Sauter. I am grateful to you and to your office for your leadership and hard work on this. I just want to express my kudos to HSH for your hard work on this as well. I know that there was a lot of controversy and things that I was hearing about this and another project, and I think it's just credit to you for your solutions-oriented creativity in getting to a place where everybody's on the same page. My gratitude as well to the Department of Public Health. I really have high hopes for the Restore program, which is really close to my heart, and I look forward to learning more about it and seeing the work that does to help improve and save lives. I want to express my gratitude to the Department of Real Estate for their work on this, and to everybody in the Lurie administration. Seeing no one else on the roster, Mr. Clerk, may we open this item up to public comment.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair, we are now opening public comment for any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number 4, and that was your opportunity.
Good morning. Wow, that's loud. Barbara Swan, Lower Nob Hill Neighborhood Alliance board member. The Lower Nob Hill Alliance supports the revised resolution as it's been read into the record. As many of you know, and it's been said a lot here, there were just so many meetings, tours, discussions, Saturday morning conversations regarding the fate of the Adante. We believe this revised resolution is an absolute win for our neighborhood. It's a win for HSH and above all the city. We'll be able to continue the much needed restore, continue and grow the much needed restore program. We have assurances that in 12 to 24 months, the Adante will close, which is a good thing for our own economic growth. We'd like to thank Supervisor Sauter for jumping in his earliest days in his tenure and patiently listening to our concerns, mostly mine. Tomio Nagano for always being available to answer technical questions. Kunal Modi, whose willingness to meet with us, have open discussions, listen to our concerns, and tour the neighborhood. He sort of gave us hope in the process again. To Emily Cohen, who immediately responded to my text, even though I'm pretty sure she knew she was going to hear something that she didn't want to. And finally, our neighbors in the Tenderloin. Is that time? Am I getting the
30 seconds?
Okay. And finally, our neighborhoods in the Tenderloin and the Polk Street District for unwavering support. We are deeply appreciative of them. I'd like to make a personal observation based on my time working on the board. It seems to me that the fundamental question has shifted from how do we house as many people as possible in this emergency, success being calculated by the numbers of beds.
And that is time.
Okay. To how do we integrate?
Yes, our speaker's time has expired. But thank you, Barbara Swan,
okay,
for addressing this committee.
Oh, that's right.
Next speaker.
Hi. My name is Paula Hendricks, and I live on O'Farrell Street, so I am in the Tenderloin, but I'm about two blocks from the Adante Hotel. I've lived there for 21 years, and the neighborhood, as you have all acknowledged, is not the same as it was before. And thank you to the Lower Knob Hill folks. We've built a good alliance with these kinds of issues. I am in favor of supporting the one-year lease. I'm not in favor of the second, but I'd roll with that. My concern is what I heard at the end, where in phase three, they're going to be double the number of beds put in the Tenderloin. So it feels like, oh good, we're just moving it around again, and now we're going to put it back in the Tenderloin. So when those hearings come up, you will probably hear from me again. But I want to thank the mayor for listening to us. It's the first time in years that someone has listened to us. And no offense to you, Supervisor Souter, but thanks to Bilal Mahmood for listening to us. And I hope we can have at least really good neighbor policies that are enforced, not just in front of the space, but in the blocks surrounding the space. So that's it. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Paul Hendricks, for addressing this committee. And with that, Mr. Vice Chair, that completes our queue.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Public comment is now closed. And I would like to express my gratitude to the neighborhood participants who turned out, and also those who didn't but who participated in this. And I think I should also express gratitude to Supervisor Mahmood for his work on a project that came up that was somewhat related to this. I feel like the, you know, I would not have predicted when this first came up that this would be settled in a way that turned out to be really positive and amicable, so kudos to everybody involved. Seeing no further questions or comments from colleagues, I would like to move that we amend this item as presented by the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing and continue this item to the next meeting as amended. Mr. Clerk, could we have a roll call on that motion?
Ahead of that vote, Mr. Vice Chair, I did just want to clarify with the department that I believe the wrong amount of the lease was read into the record, and I just wanted to clarify the amount.
Correct. It's the $1.4 million dollar number. Thank you.
Thank you much. And okay, and on that motion to accept the amendments as are read into the record by the department and to continue this resolution to our April 23rd meeting of this committee as amended. Member Engardio. Engardio, aye. Member Chen. Chen, aye. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. We have three ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. The motion passes. And Mr. Clerk, can we please call the next two items together?
Five and six. Item number five is a resolution approving and authorizing the Director of Property on behalf of the Human Services Agency, County Transportation Authority, and Libraries Information Technology Unit to execute a First Amendment to the lease agreement with Hudson 1455 Market LLC as landlord to take an additional 226,000 rentable square feet of office space and 6,000 rentable square feet of basement storage at 1455 Market Street for the balance of an initial term of 21 years, effective upon approval of the resolution by the Board of Supervisors and the Mayor, and upon execution of the lease amendment by the Director of Property, terminating on April 30th, 2045, to expend an amount not to exceed approximately $900,000 for rent, parking, and electrical costs for fiscal year 2024 to 2025, with a base rent of approximately $1.9 million for the initial year, plus approximately $42,600 of basement storage for fiscal year 2025 to 2026, with 2 5-year options to extend, and rent at $41 per square foot with 3% annual increases thereafter, to authorize the Director of Real Estate to the extent of available operating budget and not covered by the tenant improvement allowance to expend an amount not to exceed approximately $15.5 million for digital technology costs, tenant improvements, alternatives, and furniture, fixtures, and equipment, affirming the Planning Department's determination under the California Environmental Quality Act, adopting The planning department's findings of consistency with the general plan and the 8 priority policies of the planning code, and authorizing the director of property to execute any amendments, options to extend the agreement term, make certain modifications, and take certain actions that did not materially increase the obligations nor liabilities to the city, nor decrease the benefits to the city, and are necessary or advisable to effectuate the purposes of the lease agreement or this resolution. And item number 6 is an ordinance appropriating $8.5 million from projected revenue surplus, deappropriating approximately $3.3 million from building and structure improvement and capital renewal projects at 1235 Mission Street, and appropriating approximately $11.8 million to interdepartmental services, rent paid to real estate, and in the Human Services Agency to fund one-time tenant improvement and furniture, fixtures, and equipment costs at 1145 Market Street pursuant to the city's new lease for spaces designated for the Human Services Agency in fiscal year 2024 to 2025. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. We have Enrico Penick, the Director of the Real Estate Division, and he is joined by Dan Kaplan, who is the Deputy Director of Finance and Administration for the Human Services Agency, to present on these items. Mr. Penick, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, Vice Chair Dorsey, Supervisor Arcadio, Supervisor Chen, Enrico Penick, Director of Real Estate. As you just mentioned, I have Mr. Dan Kaplan and Cecilia Pedroza of HSA with me. They will be presenting the ordinance item. First, I just wanted to give you the order of presentation. I will present the lease amendment. I will then turn it over to Mr. Kaplan to present the deappropriation and appropriation of HSA's budget, which is related to this item. I will then read into the record substantive changes for both the resolution and the ordinance. And at the appropriate time, myself, Mr. Kaplan, Ms. Pedroza, and others from HSA will be available to answer any questions you may have. This is a lease amendment for approximately 225,883 rentable square feet for the Human Services Agency, County Transportation Authority, and Library IT Unit at 1455 Market Street with the city as tenant. Before I get into the details of the lease amendment, I wanted to just take a half step back to remind the committee how we got here. The city administrator's office, the board of supervisors, and the mayor's office inquired to the Department of Real Estate as to why the city couldn't take advantage of falling prices in the real estate market to basically come up with a buy opportunity. Heeding that direction, we were looking for an opportunity that would basically not subject the city to the highs and lows of the real estate market. We wanted to have an ability to consolidate our civic center holdings so we didn't have duplicative maintenance and capital cost. We also wanted to get out of seismically challenged buildings that we have in the civic center area. But on top of that, we also needed a runway. We knew that in the tight budget times caused by COVID, we wouldn't be able to just go out and buy a building with a 30-day escrow close. We needed an opportunity that would allow the city to plan ahead for an eventual purchase. We did some analysis of the buildings in the Civic Center area, and we found 1455 met the city's needs. And due to the willing partners that we found at Hudson Properties, the landlord, we were able to execute a lease option, and purchase option. This gives the city the opportunity to have the runway that it needs to make the business decision as to whether or not to buy the building at the appropriate time or long-term lease it, thus achieving its other objectives. I'm before you today with the First Amendment, which is under that lease option. This lease option allows for the expansion of the current premises to include three new tenants. the County Transportation Authority, or CTA, Library IT, and the Human Services Agency, or HSA. As you can see by this chart, County Transportation Authority is already in the building on the 22nd floor in a separate lease. They occupy approximately 27,000 square feet. They will be remaining in the building in their current premises, but being folded under the master lease. They have approximately 45 FTEs. Library IT is in the main library at 100 Larkin Street. They are in various locations throughout the library, totaling approximately 3,500 square feet. They will be moving to 1455 Market Street on the 8th floor into approximately 7,600 square feet. They have 27 FTEs. The Human Services Agency is by far the largest tenant moving in under this lease amendment. They're coming from various locations, the largest two being 1235 Mission Street and 170 Otis. In total, they're in approximately 191,000 square feet. They will be moving to 1455 Market Street, occupying the 2nd, 4th, and 18th floors, taking about 190,000 square feet, and they have 730 FTEs. I just wanted to do a slight clarification. The second floor, because there is an elevation change between Market Street and Mission Street, it's designated as the second floor, but it's actually the ground floor on Mission Street. As you can see by the totals, we're looking at approximately a one-for-one consolidation. As to the deal point terms, again, the building owner and landlord is Hudson Properties. The total building size is approximately 1.1 million square feet. Just as a reminder, in phase one, which occurred last year, we took 157,000 square feet on floors 7, 12, 13, 16, and 17. The phase two, the lease amendment, which is related to phase two, is 225,000 square feet on floors 2, 4, 8, 18, and 22. The total occupancy after the phase two move-in will be 422,000 square feet. This includes a separate MTA lease that's on the 7th floor at approximately 40,000 square feet. That 422,000 square foot number is significant because our purchase option opens at 400,000 square feet. Thus, with this phase two, the purchase option for the city is available and will remain open until December 31st, 2027. This is a 21-year lease, and we have 20 years remaining. We have the lease extensions, two five-year options to extend, and the lease will expire April 30th, 2045. The phase two rent will start upon delivery of the space. For CTA, their current lease expires June 30th, 2025, which means that their rent under the new lease will start July 1, the following day. Library IT has a small tenant improvement, which we believe will be completed by July 1, 2025, which is when their lease will start as well. HSA's tenant improvement is significant. We currently anticipate that the space will be ready February 2026. Obviously, if there are any delays in the delivery of the space, we will not be subject to rent until the space is actually delivered. The rent rate for this phase two matches the existing lease, which started at $40 per square foot but escalates at 3%. So starting May 1, the effective rate will be $41.20. That rent is fully serviced net electricity. Again, it escalates at 3%. Because we're exercising phase two, the base year is moved from 2025 to 2027. That is effective for the entire lease, including phase one. That means we will not be subject to operating expenses until July 1, 2028. The TI allowance is $100 per square foot, and in the case of phase two, that equates to approximately $22.5 million. The moving allowance is $15 per square foot, and in phase two, that equates to approximately $3 million. The total allowances thus are $25.5 million. The city is obligated under this phase two with the tenant improvement plan to have a one-time cost of $15.5 million, and that is for HSA's tenant improvement. Mr. Kaplan will explain that in further detail as he presents the ordinance. Again, we have the option to lease additional space in the building up until December 31st, 2027. Our purchase option is now open, and we have the ability to purchase based upon an appraisal of fair market value up until December 31st, 2027. At this point in time, I will turn it over to Mr. Kaplan to discuss HSA's budget supplement. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kaplan. The floor is yours. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Dan Kaplan, Deputy Director of Finance and Administration for the Human Services Agency, and I am here to talk to you about the companion ordinance that allows us to cover the costs of the one-time improvements that Andrew Gopenik just mentioned. So before we get to that, HSA in this move is beginning a process that it has been planning for a long time to move from two buildings that are seismic hazard rated four buildings. One is 170 Otis, which is the quote-unquote HSA headquarters. It's an eight-story building, and it houses our executive staff. It houses most of our family and children services offices, and it houses most of our CalWORKs and workforce development programs, as well as our facilities and operations group. 1235 Mission is a school district facility that we've been in for decades. It is 118,000 square feet of office and service center space. It houses the County Adult Assistance Program, and it houses about half of the Medi-Cal and CalFresh eligibility programs. As Mr. Penick was speaking just a moment ago, 1455 Market is a site that will house for HSA a number of different programs, but they will be the CAP program from 1235, CalFresh and Medi-Cal program from 1235, and from a few other locations. We'll move into this building. As well as workforce development folks who are working with the CAP clients and with CalFresh clients. And then we will also have a large back office operation for our economic support and self-sufficiency group on the fourth floor of the building, and the 18th floor will house executive teams, analytic teams, both supporting the whole agency and supporting economic support and self-sufficiency. So, Andrico Penick mentioned that there is $15.5 million of costs over and above the tenant improvement allowances that we will be incurring costs for in this move-in. The largest share of that is really for the setup of the service center. And as Mr. Penick mentioned, the service center has a separate entrance at 1460 Mission. It's the ground floor on the Mission Street side of the building. That floor will also house some of our operations units, our mail room, our supply room, things like that. But most of that space and most of the cost will go into setting up the service center, which is where we will see a very significant number of clients, probably 500 or 600 folks a day. So the cost of that work, and this has been developed in cooperation between HSA facilities staff and program staff, RED's staff on working on this project and Hudson in terms of costing out this work. Most of this cost will be covered by the supplemental appropriation that's before you today. What that does is it recognizes $8.5 million of revenue surplus, and it also repurposes $3.3 million of capital balances for projects that would have been done at 1235 Mission had we stayed in that building. So let me speak for a moment about what's within that. The revenue surplus comes from three sources. Two of them are allocations of state and federal money higher than what was budgeted for this fiscal year. There's $2.2 million of additional Medi-Cal eligibility money. There's $3.7 million of additional CalFresh state allocation. And then there's a shift of 2011 realignment revenue that's made possible by lower than anticipated foster care caseloads. So then it's possible for us to shift that revenue to the operating budget and use it as a one-time amount of money to fund this project. In addition, as I said before, there's $3.3 million of capital project balances for work that we had intended to do at 1235 Mission in the event that we had stayed in that building. $1.6 million of that is for work on the elevators in the building. $0.8 million of that is work on the windows, and $1 million of that is HVAC work. So bringing that all together, that gets us to the $11.8 million. Now, you'll note that Mr. Penick and I have both said that the move-in costs over and above the allowances are $15.5 million, not $11.8. So the balance of that money will come from underspending within the current year's HSA budget that the budget staff are able to surplus transfer administratively. So between all those sources, we will get to the $15.5 million without seeking additional general fund. That is my presentation.
Great, thank you, Mr. Kaplan. Next, we will hear from Mr. Menard from the Budget and Legislative Analyst.
Items 5 and 6 are there's a resolution approving a lease amendment for 1455 Market Street, and then also an appropriation ordinance. The lease was described by the department officials. You can find the lease terms on page 17 of our report. But essentially what this amendment does is allow HSA to move portions of their staff from 170 Otis into 1455 Market, move the library IT division from the main library to this building, and then consolidate an existing lease for a CTA at that building at a lower rental rate. The supplemental appropriation is capturing unbudgeted revenues in HSA's budget this year that can offset general fund spending, and then unneeded project funds that were going to be used to improve 1235 Market, which together provide $11.8 million in general fund spending that will be applied to the tenant improvement project, which I'll talk about in a moment. So the city is leaving a lease at 1235 Mission that does create savings of about $3.5 million a year. It's also leaving city-owned space at 170 Otis. So there is a net increase and the rental costs that are going to be need to be supported by the general fund. The library is not a general fund payer, and CTA has its own funding through the sales tax. So when you look at HSA's use of the building going forward and you net out the savings from 1235 Mission, it's about a $3 million a year increase in the general fund for rental costs. as was mentioned by Director Pennick, the lease amendment allows the city to purchase the building in 2027. There's no room in the capital plan that you approved yesterday to make that purchase. There is $55 million to purchase a site in the Bayview and the COP program, but there's no funding for purchasing this site, so it will require changes to the capital plan to make this building purchase, identifying another revenue source to do that. The lease does provide allowances for moving costs, which will cover the moving costs for all these new tenants, and it also provides allowances for tenant improvements. So, and we detail the tenant improvements on page 13 of our report. You'll see it's $38 million. As noted by HSA, the department that exceeds the tenant improvement allowance provided by the landlord by about $15.5 million, and they have a plan for funding that within their own budget. I think, you know, we looked at the project costs. The project costs are fairly reasonable relative to other city projects and other projects in the area. But I think given the city's fiscal condition, we do have some options for you to consider to bring down the cost just a little bit. If you want, they include redesigning the executive office floor to have fewer private offices and more cubicles. I think that could save $1 to $1.4 million in tenant improvement costs. HSA is also planning to spend $5.85 million on furniture. So that's about $8,000 per person that they're moving in. There's furniture for the service center. But the city could explore using used furniture. There's a market for that, given the historically high office vacancies that we're seeing in San Francisco and in the region, or reusing a lot of their existing furniture. That could bring that number down somewhat. So we are recommending approval of the lease and the supplemental appropriation, but do offer those policy considerations for you.
Thank you, Mr. Bernard. And great work, by the way, on the this is a complicated, lot of moving parts to this building. I'm appreciative as the District 6 supervisor, obviously. I'm excited about the overall cost savings, sort of standing back about this, the real estate transaction. I understand that the departments wanted both items to be heard at the Board of Supervisors at the same time, but the amendments to the item 6 are substantive. The amendments to the resolution are not. So we can do one of two things that will get us to the same result. We could accept the amendments, and if you want, I can read the amendments into the record. For items 5 and 6 and continue both to the April 23rd meeting of this committee, as amended, or we could accept the amendments to items 5 and 6 and then move to forward item 5 to the April 29th meeting of the Board of Supervisors, and then continue item 6 to the April 23rd Budget and Finance Committee meeting as amended. My preference was to do this item 2 or to do part 2. So we can send the resolution out because the amendments aren't substantive to the full board.
Vice Chair Dorsey, Andrico Pennick again, Director of Real Estate. I agree with your thinking that the second of the two options that you just mentioned is preferable. Okay. That we amend and move forward with the lease resolution to a date certain, and then have the ordinance catch up and have the board consider both of them on the April 29th meeting.
Okay.
I am prepared to read the proposed changes into the record. Sure. If that pleases you.
Can I just clarify with the Deputy City Attorney, would the timing be that they're both landing at the same time at the board?
Good morning, Supervisors. Deputy City Attorney Brad Russey. I believe if the board moves forward, or if the committee moves the resolution forward today with positive recommendation, it'll be on the board's agenda next Tuesday, not on the 29th. And then the ordinance would be heard in committee again next week. Mm-hmm. Then it would be at the full board for first reading on the 29th. So they wouldn't be lined up if that's the desire for the first approval to be at the full board on the same date.
Through the chair, could the committee recommend that it be heard on a date certain on the 29th?
I defer to the clerk on that. So the committee can recommend that the resolution be on the board's agenda on the 29th. Okay.
Through the chair to both the deputy city attorney and Director Pennick. It can be an action it can be moved by this committee that an item be forwarded to a date certain of the Board of Supervisors. And in fact, we do that with the trailing legislation during budget season. Okay. That usually things heard during rounds one and two of budget appropriations are forwarded to, say, the first reading of the annual appropriation ordinance. And the deputy city attorney was correct in that items forwarded today would typically go to the Board of Supervisors agenda of April 22nd, but if it's the intention to hear them both, we can accept the motion to forward the resolution as amended to April 29th, specifically, okay, if that's read into the record.
Okay, that's the motion that I will make. Mr. Pennick, do you want to read the amendments into the record?
Yes, sir.
Hold on a sec, Supervisor.
Oh, sorry, before, thank you. Thank you, Dirk. Before we move forward, can I ask a question? I just heard that BLA have some recommendations in terms of how to manage the cost, so including a redesign of the executive floor to include more cubicle and also an option of use the furniture. Are we in conversation about those options? I mean, $3 million in general fund cost, to me, in the next 2 years, it's definitely something, means a lot of services cut, too.
Supervisor Chen, I'll start the answer to the question, then I'll defer to HSA, who may also some thoughts on the item. First off, I would say that we've done a very good job of trying to keep the cost down, and even the BLA acknowledge that the overall cost of this project is in line with other city projects. As a matter of fact, it comes in at the lower end of the average. The second thing that I would say is that the vast majority of the cost is based upon the service center on the second floor. That is not a typical office build out. I think of it more like a TSA center in an airport. You have to design it in a specific way to be able to intake a lot of people, process them, and then to get them out. That build-out cost is more than the average. The other thing that I would also say as it relates to furniture is that this is a 21-year lease. The existing furniture that HSA has is dated and would not last the term of this lease. So you would be buying new furniture at some point in the future during the term of this lease. And in my experience, it's better to buy that up front when you're first moving in. You have carpet, you have paint, and then you amortize that cost through the use of that furniture throughout the 21 years now remaining 20 years of the lease. So although I think that I agree with the BLA, we need to try to save money wherever possible. In this particular case, I don't know that those changes are really appropriate given the circumstances that we have here. But I'll defer to HSA to see if they have additional thoughts.
Sure, thank you for posing the question. I guess a few things. Mr. Menard mentioned that there is a difference in cost of the lease of about $3 million, but the space at 1455 is actually housing a good deal more than what's coming out of 1235. So there are a few things to think about there. One is We are housing a number of the people from 170 at 1455. And when we get out of 170, we will have an asset that the city can then repurpose. So that's not really in the comparison, but it is, you know, it is a substantial building. It's an 135,000 square foot building with a big basement on a fairly good sized plot of land. The city can then repurpose that. So that in a way has to be taken into account. It's a little imprecise. The other thing to think about in cost comparisons is that HSA actually, although we rent the space from the school district, we do a great deal of work on the space that we wouldn't, of the sort we wouldn't have to do at 1455. So we do a lot of the maintenance work on the building. As I mentioned before, we actually do capital work on the building. And over the years, we have had a number of projects that we do on the building. We won't incur costs for those sorts of projects once we leave 1235. So the gap is less than the $3 million a year. That's one important point. The second point that Mr. Penick spoke to a little bit is the furniture. And it is true that there is used furniture out there on the market that could be purchased. Mr. Penick said the HSA furniture is pretty old and really doesn't make sense to be brought along. We agree with him on that. I think Mr. Menard's recommendation was that we explore buying used furniture that's available on the market today. And, you know, in our discussions on that, we noted that we are trying to outfit a space for 730 people. It's hard to get matching furniture for crowds that big. It's also, in a great deal of the space, the case that we have fairly precisely designed spaces that make use of furniture that we know is available. And so if we were to go out into the market, we would, A, not necessarily be able to find furniture that fits with our design, and B, we would spend a great deal of time identifying it, checking it, buying it, trying to make up batches of it, getting it moved in. So that adds time to the project, and it takes us longer than to make that happen. We didn't think it was really a practical way to approach this. So that was on the furniture. And then the last point is on the redesign of the 18th floor. And Mr. Menard did mention that there are many offices on the 18th floor. I believe there are 25 offices that are on the 18th floor in our space design. And I would just say to you that what we are doing is we're moving our headquarters to that floor. So nobody is going into an office on that floor who's not coming out of an office in one of our other buildings. I did ask our facility staff to take a look at the size of the offices at 1455 in comparison to the size of the offices that people are coming out of. Of the 25 offices, 21 have people who are leaving larger offices and going into smaller offices at 1455. There are four people who are going into slightly larger offices. But you know, in our minds, this is not a profligate use of space. We are going to be using that space for our agency head, deputy directors, program directors, chiefs of analytic units. So it is really, it is the case that we are redesigning a space with offices for people who are coming out of offices and who use those offices on a regular basis for meetings that are confidential or meetings that are staff meetings. And it feels, again, impractical to us to say to all those folks, sit in cubicles and don't use your offices the way you've been used to using them. So, I don't disagree with Mr. Menard that would bring down the costs, because a big part of the cost we're incurring on the 18th floor is the building of offices. But It does feel like it would be designing a space in a way that would make it not usable for the people who are moving into it.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Does HSA have an inventory of existing furniture?
We don't have an official inventory.
Isn't this part of the accounting? How we report it in the accounting system?
We have assets.
The appreciate.
We do keep track of our assets, and furniture are part of those. I guess what I would say is that HSA's furniture. So we have been in 170 since the 70s, and you know, the replacement of furniture has been pretty catch-as-catch-can over that time. In 1235, we've been there for many, many years, and the furniture is you know, pretty used, beat-up furniture. It's not that it's furniture with great value. I think the existing HSA furniture really wouldn't be practical for us to move. I think Mr. Menard's suggestion was more practical than that, which was to go out into the market and see if you could buy used furniture in large enough lots. I don't think that's really an idea that will save us appreciable amounts of money. And as Mr. Panic pointed out, we are moving in on essentially a 20-year lease with an option to buy the building. It's reasonable for us to assume that this furniture, if we buy it new, will be the furniture that we have for many years to come. So it makes sense on the way in to get furniture that works for the space.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question for Mr. Pennick. So my perspective on this, I think, was kind of taking the view of the asset that we may buy, but also that there's value that the city, and efficiencies that the city is getting, and cost savings that the city is getting by this at 1455 Market Street anyway. What is the number of getting everybody into that citywide? If we take a look at the big number, do we have a number that of dollars that we're saving with this?
That is extremely difficult to calculate, because it really depends on decisions that the city is yet to make. You know, take for example, there's 1.1 million square feet at 1455. We could consolidate all of our civic center holdings, and when I say all, I don't include City Hall, of course, or 49 South Van Ness, which is our newest building, nor do I include 1650 Mission Street. But all of our other holdings, 1 South Van Ness, 25 Van Ness, leases that we have in Fox Plaza and other locations, we could move all of those into the Hudson Building at 1455. If we were to do so, that would free up some assets that we could then dispose of when the market was more favorable. Mm-hmm. We could sell 1 South Van Ness. We could sell 170 Otis. That would basically offset some of those initial costs. Also, it is uncalculable as to what our capital needs would be in the short term. The city, unfortunately, has a habit of deferring needed capital improvements and maintenance. We don't spend money on our assets the way private landlords do and the way that we should. So it's hard to calculate how much money we're saving because we're not spending the way we should. We wait for it to explode, and then we fix it on the hurry up. But once those decisions are made, we will be able to look at the deferred maintenance that we, the cost avoidance of deferred maintenance. I think Mr. Kaplan mentioned that, say at 1235 Mission Street, some of the things that are on the capital list that will now no longer need to be done because they're moving. And we'll be able to do the same thing for city-owned assets that we have in Civic Center if and when we make those decisions.
Okay. Thanks. Any other questions or comments?
Should I read the changes into the record now,
please.
Vice Chair? As to the resolution, the proposed change starting on page 1, line 19, the word equipment, semicolon, remains. The remainder of that line is deleted. Lines 20 and 21 are deleted in their entirety. Line 22, the word section 101.1, semicolon, is deleted. On page 7, lines 6 through 9 are deleted in their entirety. These changes are to delete misleading and incorrect information as it relates to the general plan referral process for this item. As to the ordinance, page 1, line 2, the word 1145 is deleted and replaced with the word 1455. Page 1, line 9, the word 1145 is deleted and replaced with the word 1455. These changes are the correct, the address for the Hudson Building, which is at 1455, not 1145, that is related to where the revenues for the tenant improvements will be spent. That concludes the changes, and we're available for any additional questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Penick. Seeing no one on the roster with further questions or comments, Mr. Clerk, may we open this up to public comment?
Yes, we are now opening public comment for any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding these items 5 and 6. Now is your opportunity. Mr. Vice Chair, we have no speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Public comment is now closed. And seeing no one on the roster, I would move to amend both items 5 and 6 as read into the record by Mr. Penick. Mr. Clerk, I'm going to take that as a separate motion. Can we have a roll call on that motion to amend?
Yes, and on that motion, to accept the amendments as so read into the record by the Director of Real Estate to both items 5 and 6. Member Engardio.
Aye.
Engardio, aye. Member Chen. Chen, aye. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. We have 3 ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. The motion passes. And I would now move to forward item 5 as amended to the full board meeting of April 29th, 2025 with a positive recommendation and move that item 6 as amended be continued to the next meeting of this committee, April 23rd, 2025. Mr. Clerk, can we have a roll call on that motion?
Yes, and on that motion to forward the resolution in item 5 to the April 29th meeting of the full board with a positive recommendation and continue the ordinance in item 6 to the April 23rd meeting of this committee, both of which amended. Member Engardio.
Aye.
Engardio, aye. Member Chen. Chen, aye. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. We have 3 ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. The motion passes. Mr. Clerk, are there any more items before us today?
Mr. Vice Chair, that concludes our business.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clerk, and thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.
Thank you, Supervisors.